Hello and welcome to Radio Edutalk. This is David Noble in Dalgety Bay, and I'm delighted to welcome to this morning's show Libby Thornhill, who is a foster carer, and we're going to be talking for the next 15 or 20 minutes about the Head, Heart and Hands programme. If you're listening to the live show, you can get in touch in two ways. You can email edutalker, that's edutalkr, at hotmail.co.uk, or you can pop something up on Twitter and include the hashtag Edutalk. Welcome to the show, Libby.
Thank you very much.
Can you just start by giving us an idea about who you are and what you do, and a little bit about your journey so far as a foster carer?
Yes, I'm a foster carer for Staffordshire County Council, and I'm a long-term foster carer, which means that I take children who are in need of care up until they are 18 or ready to leave my care. At the moment, I have two children in placement, and they are the subject of the reports that I made with regard to their progress they've made since they came and were placed with us. They've been with us since 2011, and they are progressing extremely well. Staffordshire has a Head, Heart, Hands programme for its foster carers, but also for its social workers and its family support workers, indeed anybody who works with children. And it's that programme that has transformed the education and also the social and emotional needs of the children within our care, and transformed their ability to cope with society and also to make progress within our care.
Mm-hmm. So can you tell us about the programme itself? You know, where did it originate? You know, how's it delivered to foster care, social workers and others, and what are its main features?
Yes, I think it was as a result of a study that had been done comparing the outcomes for children in care in the UK to the outcomes for young people in care in Europe. And there was a definite difference between the outcomes in Europe as in the UK. And therefore, there was a study that was done as to why that might well be. And it was discovered that in Europe, social pedagogy is used alongside social care. In fact, you cannot become a social worker unless you've also studied social pedagogy. It comes in hand in hand. And so the only difference in Europe, compared to their education and their health and their housing, and over here, was that social pedagogues were used in Europe and they're not used over here. I mean, it might well be easier to say that in Spain, for example, social pedagogy is called social education, and I think that's the key to it. Because actually what it is social education, enabling young people to understand relationships and understand society and therefore be able to cope and learn. And so the government decided that over here there would be a four-year programme which was managed by the Fostering Network. And they picked six sites, one of which was an independent fostering agency, but six local authorities, all very, very different, because they were trying to see whether or not in different environments the process or the programme would work. And so they chose, for example, the Orkney Islands up in Scotland, Edinburgh. They chose Staffordshire, which is a very large local authority in the middle of England and has both rural and industrial areas. They chose Hackney in London. They also chose leafy suburbs down further south. So what they were trying to do is find very, very different local authorities where they could trial this process over a four-year period and see what the outcomes were and whether or not it made a difference. And over that period of time, it has indeed made quite a substantial difference in the children where social pedagogy is being practiced, and also for social workers and carers and any other persons who have been trained to deliver care to children. And I think it's the outcomes which are really, really key to the process and encouraging other local authorities to use social pedagogy. We're not the only local authorities, but the Head, Heart, Hands project aren't the only local authorities using it. For example, Derbyshire uses it very, very successfully, and other local authorities use it very, very successfully. But it's a beginning, and I think that passing the word on and getting the word heard is really important for trying to make sure that children succeed more in this country and their outcomes from care are better.
Mm-hmm. And Libby, is it possible to kind of boil down what the main aims of the programmes are, the main outcomes indeed for the adults? In what way does it differ from maybe the previous practices?
I think the differences are that there are particular models that we use when looking after the children. One of the models is one of the basic models is the Diamond model, and that's all about talking to children about the inner part of any adult or any child or any person is that there is a sparkly diamond inside, and it's actually finding a way to bring that out. And that's brought out by a range of positive experiences. So we encourage the children to constantly think about the positive experiences they have and encourage them to shine, in effect, at everything that they actually do. One of the properties of a diamond is how hard it is. But the diamond model symbolises one of the most fundamental underpinning principles of social pedagogy, that there is actually a diamond within all of us. And it's really, really important that the children understand that they can express how they feel, they can talk about how they feel, and they can strive towards how they feel. So with the children that we work with, we use the thumbs up, a thumbs down, and a thumbs midway to demonstrate whether or not they were feeling happy, sad, or a little of both. And by doing that, they learn how to express they felt, how they felt, how to be more mindful of others, of how they were feeling, and if others needed extra consideration. And so for them, it meant that they were able to start to consider others. And because of where they had actually come from, they'd never really thought about how others were feeling or how what they did might impact on others. And so learning how to consider things through the diamond model meant that they started to react more positively with peers and teachers and others that they came across. And so their relationships, their peer relationships started to improve, their educational relationships started to improve, and so they started to learn more. The other, one of the main models is called the learning zone, and that is really fundamental to how they learned. And that is where, if you're comfortable with what you're actually doing, you're in your comfort zone, you don't need to learn, you're not panic-stricken, so you're quite happy where you are. If you're in your learning zone, it means that you're starting to learn stuff, but it takes you out of your comfort zone a little bit, so you're starting to feel a little bit more uncomfortable. However, you are starting to learn. And then you move into the panic zone. That's when you can't learn anything at all because you are fearful of everything around you. And with the children, to start with, most of the time they were in their panic zone. So they were not learning. They were unable to learn within a classroom setting, within a home setting. So once they could actually learn where they were, they could put into place how to cope, a coping mechanism, how to cope when they found themselves in the panic zone, so that they could move from panic to learning, and how to cope from their learning zone, so they could actually learn and move into their comfort zone. Now, it sounds a little bit wishy-washy, but in practice it actually works, because the children now will be happily able to tell you in any situation how they feel, but also how to move from one zone to the other. And it was that thing that enabled them to learn much, much more at school. One would be what I would classify as the typical classroom clown. In fact, that given half the opportunity, he would be up on the table or jumping around the room, or trying to draw attention to himself to make friends and make an impression on folk. And this is not how you learn. It's not how it endears your teacher to you. However, when he was recognising what zone he was actually in, when he was starting to consider other people's feelings, his relationships and his behaviour in class improved to the degree that he started to learn far more. With a younger child who was not learning at all at school, once he'd actually started to learn what zone he was in, he could relax a little bit more and he could start to actually learn. And certainly with learning to read, that process was something that enabled him to start to listen and start to learn. Mm-hmm. And another of the models we use is called the common third, and that's probably one of the most important models within social pedagogy. And that is where the practitioner or the carer or the teacher and the child are equal to start with, and they work on a project together. And it can be an activity. Now, infant teachers do this all the time, especially older English teachers who have learned or gone to training quite a considerable amount of time ago. This is all about building an activity into a learning process. And therefore, for the youngest child who didn't read when he first came to us, we would read or we would look at a range of books, but also always have an activity at the end of each book to read. And therefore, he started to look forward to the activity, and we did that activity together. And it was almost by chance that he actually learned, in inverted commas, to read. It was doing the activity that built the relationship, and the relationship enabled him to start to trust and therefore start to learn. And I think that if you wanted to say what is social pedagogy in a nutshell, I would say it was a relationship. It was learning alongside a child about what the relationships are and what each can give to each other. So common third activities are always on an equal level, so the practitioner or the carer of the child, the teacher and the child are on an equal level when they're learning or doing an activity together. And that in itself builds their relationship. so that they start to trust each other, and therefore the child can start to learn, and the adult can learn more about the child can learn more about the adult.
Mm-hmm. And have you interpreted the kind of three models at all, Libby, or do you kind of take it based on how it appears on paper, or how the academics or others have constructed it? Has there been any tensions for you?
I think there have been, yes. I mean, the Head, Heart, Hand programme, the head is all about the theory, the heart is all about the relationships that you're trying to actually build with the child, and the hand is about the creativity that you do. Yes, there have been challenges. As a parent of young adults myself, my children are in their 30s and 20s, I was very used to, as a parent, organising everything and making sure everything was where it should be, and making sure that when we did activities, I'd organise everything, and then we could went and enjoyed ourselves. The onus is on the child being able and enabled to actually arrange things themselves, and then being empowered to do so. So if we're doing an activity now, the children will have to think about how we're going to get... Well, first of all, identify what they'd like to do, and then whether or not we actually have the money to do it, because we'll talk about budget, but also how we're going to get there, what we might need, in other words, the food that we might need. So they might be thinking about the processes and thinking about how we're going to do the activities we're doing, rather than I would have done at the very beginning. So that was the difference. Enabling them to do that took quite a bit of self-restraint from me, because it was inbuilt in most parents to actually just get on and do. To be able to have a step back was the challenge for me, to enable the children to be able to do it themselves. I was there to support them, but not there to do it for them. I suppose for me, that was the bit that I had to learn very much so, to step back, especially when the children first arrived. I would enable and encourage. Now it's almost second nature, but not quite. So there's a lot of theory built into social pedagogy, so that's why it's really worthwhile doing some research, and that's what I found really, really interesting. As the course itself, the programme progressed, each of the sessions that we actually did was based on theory, but then the practice was discussed. So I suppose for me, it was the interpretation of the theory, but also the guidance that the Head, Heart, Hand training gave us as to how we should do it. So, so now what we actually do with the children is very much hands-on, but they are on an equal level to us as we are discovering things together. So for example, when we did a bit of rock climbing, they were actually showing some of the adults what to do, or supporting those adults what to do, and we were doing the same thing. So it's a joint thing.
Mm-hmm. And do you think with the foster carers and the social workers, do you think they're all able to kind of learn or buy into the Head, Heart, Hands programme, or do you think those people that are going to succeed with it and actually change the way they live and learn with young people, do they have to have particular predispositions or capacities to be able to succeed?
I think that if every single person who works with children could benefit from looking and understanding a little bit more about social pedagogy. There's one of the phrases within social pedagogy, Haltung, which is a German term which translates as an ethos or a mindset or attitude. It's how we guide our actions by what we believe in. So it's quite difficult to say specifically social pedagogy is exactly such and such, because it's more of a mindset than an ethos. But I do believe that when you can see the outcomes for the children, when you look at the children who have been through this process, you can see why people who have actually become trained and understood a little bit more about it are so enthusiastic about it, because it really does work. The children in our care have literally transformed the way they are able to communicate with others, the way they have learnt peer relations, the way they are progressing socially and academically. Now, they're not going to, I'm not suggesting that they're going to be scientists and change the world. What we wanted was these children would be able to deal with life as it hits them when they become adults, and therefore be able to cope. Because what we're talking about is outcomes to looked after children being equal to everybody else's. And at the moment in the United Kingdom, that is not the case. And what we're trying to do is find a way to enable them to succeed as much as we would want our own children to succeed.
Now, we're just coming into the last couple of minutes of the programme. I'd be interested to hear a little bit more about the work of the Fostering Network.
Yes. The Fostering Network is is in effect running the project in partnership with Partner Centre and a number of local authorities. And they have supported the process through each of the sites that have been part of this pilot study. Freya from the Fostering Network is the person who goes around and makes sure that everybody is up to speed on what they need to be and gives loads of support to all the different local authorities. So certainly if folk log on to the Fostering Network's website, there's absolutely loads of information with regard to the Head Out Hand programme. And it will also direct you through to other social pedagogy sites that people can have a look at and find out a little bit more about. I can only say that for the children that we have worked with and the other foster carers who have been through this process and social workers and family support workers at Staffordshire, the differences that we're seeing in the children are remarkable, and we want to continue to work in this way and link up with other local authorities who are also working in this way.
And finally, what advice would you give to carers and others who haven't embarked upon the programme or maybe who haven't considered or haven't heard of social pedagogy?
I would certainly encourage them to contact the Fostering Network because that is where you can get direct information, but also there's lots of links in the Fostering Network to social pedagogy. Professor Petrie from the Institute of Education in London has been one of the leading social pedagogues in the UK for a number of years and did a lot of study in Europe as well as in this country. And therefore it's worthwhile having a look at what she has written. It's definitely worthwhile looking at pedagogy websites, but I would say, first of all, primarily go to the Fostering Network website and have a look there, and that will direct you for some more information.
Just remind listeners, you've been listening to Libby Thornhill and we've been talking about the Head, Heart, Hands programme. Libby, it's been great to have you on the show and hopefully we're going to get you back in 2016 to talk about a virtual school project that you've been involved in Staffordshire. So best wishes for the rest of 2015 and we'll hopefully speak to you again soon.
Thank you very much indeed.